Welcome to WISO Weekend, WISO's weekly radio magazine. I'm Jerry Kenny. Coming up on today's program, Dayton Youth Radio and County Lines with producer Renee Wild. We've got a little free tax advice for you and a report on newly minted Governor Mike DeWine's first State of the State speech. Up first, this week NPR aired a conversation between two Ohio mothers whose children were facing addiction. The conversation was recorded by WISO managing editor Jess Mador as part of our Recovery Stories series. Here's the story as it aired this week on All Things Considered with Audie Cornish.
There are some 2 million people with opioid use disorder in the U.S., according to the most recent government survey. That means millions more Americans are living with the stress, anger, or guilt of watching a loved one struggle with addiction. People like Leanna Perez Green of Dayton, Ohio.
As a parent, it's really hard for me sometimes to live with it. I can't help but feel some responsibility, like, what did I miss along the way? Why did he start using drugs to begin with? What did I not see? What did I not do?
Her youngest son is 19 years old. He's been dealing with addiction for the last few years. During that time, Leanna Perez Green has become friends with another mom from Dayton, a mom who understands what she's going through. Her name is Becky Walsh. Walsh's son also started using drugs in his teens a few years ago in his early 40s. He finally sought treatment, and he hasn't used since 2017. Last year, Perez Green sat down with Walsh to ask her how she's gotten through it. Member station WYSO recorded their conversation.
What advice would you have for me, as my son is still a teen? What could you share with me to help me to get through some of the rough days?
I did a lot of the trying to control everything and, you know, threatening, and any trick I could pull out of my hat, I would try it. And it really never did any good. And when my youngest turned 18, I was just done. I was a single mom, and I had the opportunity to do some traveling nursing. And I hit the road. And I was gone for a total of 20 years. So that was my way of coping with it, I guess, at that point, was, you know, well, I can't do anything about this. So I left.
How do you feel about that?
I feel guilty about it. I wish I could have changed it, but I couldn't. And even looking back, I know I couldn't have. But I learned so much in the 20 years I was gone. And then when I made the decision to come home, I knew what I would be facing. And so when I came back, I was honest with them and said, I know that you're using. If you ever decide to change, that I'll be here. And I knew that that was really all I could do. And then it wasn't long after that when my son came to me and said, I can't do this anymore, Mom. I don't want to live like this. Because he was seeing his friends dying or overdosing and almost dying. And it scared him.
Well, I remember you and I talking before, and you had told me that you went through detox with your son. That had to have been a really tough situation. Do you feel like your nursing helped you with that, or did you just kind of wing it?
He didn't want me to see him in that much pain. But we stayed in the same room, within the living room. He was on the couch. I was in my recliner. We were up all night long the first night. And I have been a nurse for 40 years. Most of that time has been at the bedside. And I'm telling you now, I would never, ever let one of my patients suffer like that. So that was tough.
So I'm really curious how it feels to have your son in long-term recovery, because I've not experienced that yet.
It feels like a miracle. I feel like I got my son back. And he did it. He did all of it. He gave up where he lived. He gave up his job. He gave up his friends. He gave up any money that he had. He turned that over to me. But that's what it took. And he was okay with it, which surprised me. But it also told me how much he really, really wanted this. I'll always be grateful to him for that.
that gives me a lot of hope. It gives me hope for my son. He is a very intelligent person. He's a funny guy. And he has a huge heart. And I have a lot of hope for him. I know that he can have a good future if he could, you know, learn how to live with his addiction and get it under control. I think the sky's the limit for him. And I have not lost hope.
That was Leanna Perez Green speaking with her friend Becky Walsh last year. Perez Green's son is currently in an addiction recovery program. And this segment was produced by WYSO's Jess Mador.
You can hear more recovery stories on our website at WYSO.org. Thanks again for joining us. I'm Jerry Kenney. The theme of Governor Mike DeWine's first State of the State address was Building for the Future. This week, State House correspondents Joe Ingles and Andy Chow covered the speech and lawmakers' reaction to it.
After 7 years of former Governor John Kasich moving his State of the State speech throughout Ohio, Mike DeWine brought his first one back to the State House, where he talked about his basic philosophy.
I take the world as I find it and do everything I can to try and make it better. And through the budget we will propose, we just want to make lives better for all Ohio families.
That was one of several times when all lawmakers, regardless of party affiliation, rose in applause. At one point, DeWine asked his cabinet members who deal with Health and Human Services, all of whom are women, to stand. He told lawmakers they'd work as a team to create a new public health fund working on substance abuse, mental health treatment, and crisis support for children.
Their focus will be on people, and they will work with you, members of the General Assembly. They will work with you.
DeWine got another standing ovation when he talked about the need to back Ohio's teachers.
And let me just take a moment while we're talking about education to thank all the teachers in Ohio.
That was quite a contrast to Kasich's speech in 2011 when teachers and other unionized workers protested his support of Senate Bill 5, which made major changes in collective bargaining. It was overturned by voters that year. DeWine said he likes a Senate bill to clean up and protect Lake Erie, and he went one step further.
We're going to create a new fund called the H2 Ohio Fund to invest in targeted solutions to ensure safe and clean water all across the state of Ohio.
But as with his public health fund, DeWine didn't offer any financial details. DeWine spent the first third of his speech on his proposed 18-cent gas tax increase, saying he knows some lawmakers might be tempted to try to reduce it. But he says every cent is needed just to maintain the roads and bridges as they are now.
And I ask you for the bare minimum. I didn't want playing games with you. I didn't want to overinflate it. I wanted to tell you the truth.
I'm Andy Chow. DeWine's proposed 18-cent gas tax increase will be a major point of debate among representatives and senators over the next few weeks. Democratic House Leader Amelia Sykes says for her caucus, it's not a question of whether or not to raise the gas tax, but where the revenue goes.
We're going to ensure that public transit gets funded. There are opportunities for our low-wage earners and those on fixed incomes have the ability to pay for this, and it does not overburden them.
Republican Senator Peggy Lehner was especially supportive of DeWine's agenda when it came to helping Ohio's children. So as for spending more on early childhood programs and the state's infrastructure, Lehner says it's time to invest.
I'm worried about fixing some of these problems. I think some of these issues have been neglected for far too long.
Since DeWine spent a lot of time talking about the programs and resources that should see increased support, Republican Senator Jay Hottinger was asked if he was at all worried about overspending.
Fortunately, the state of Ohio has to have a balanced budget, and so there's a limit to what we can do. But I think what you're going to see is really just a refocusing of the priorities.
Republicans and Democrats expressed their support in DeWine's focus on public health and human services. But freshman Democratic Representative Allison Russo says she remains reserved until she sees the actual budget proposal.
You know, at the end of the day, this really comes down to what's in the budget. Show me the numbers.
Several Democrats criticized DeWine for not talking about the GM plant in Lordstown, which is set to end production this week. DeWine is expected to release his budget plan next week. Meanwhile, the transportation budget, which currently includes the gas tax hike, must pass by the end of March. For Joe Ingles, I'm Andy Chow at the Ohio Public Radio State House News Bureau.
And with just weeks to go before the tax filing deadline, April 15th, many Americans are expressing a surprise over the size of their tax refunds, with many taxpayers finding their federal returns are lower than they were in previous years. Some people who are used to getting a federal refund are finding they'll owe the IRS instead this year. The changes are directly related to the Trump administration tax reform bill. We wanted to find out why, so we spoke with Kelly Gibson, a partner at CPA Dayton. In this interview, he tells us more about the new tax law and says going forward, taxpayers may have to adjust their expectations about tax refunds. Kelly, thanks for joining us, and we want to clear up some confusion about why tax refunds might be lower this year. What can you tell us?
Yes, we've processed probably 200 tax returns this year, and the majority of them are down. What many of the clients aren't considering is that their withholding out of their weekly paycheck was also reduced, so they're seeing more of their dollars in their paycheck rather than at a refund at the end of the year.
And that actually works out, although they might be used to getting a bigger refund each year. This is their money.
That's correct. The thing that I'm seeing is if you combine the two, in other words, if you compare what's being withheld out of their checks compared to what they're getting back at the end of the year, there's just really, for most of our clients, there's just not really a big difference. You know, we may be talking $200, $300 per year net difference. Of course, it all depends on their income and their specific situation.
And certainly, some people actually may end up paying. Have you encountered many of those filers?
Fortunately, yes. Yes, we have. We've got quite a few that were in a, you know, if they were in a small refund position last year, the changes have actually, you know, forced them to pay this year. I think very few people actually went back and adjusted their withholding when the tax tables changed, largely because that happens transparently. You really didn't know that it was happening. For a single person, just to use round numbers, it went from $6,000 to $12,000. For a married couple, it went from $12,000 to $24,000. What was not publicized largely was the fact that all the personal exemptions were taken away. So let's say a family of five, two parents and three kids, they were getting $20,000 in exemptions, and then they were getting $12,000 for their standard deduction, so $32,000. Now they're getting $24,000 for their standard deduction and zero for the exemptions. So the other side of that is their child tax credit per child went up from $1,000 to $2,000. They're in a worse position now than they were before. So the people that are really getting hurt by this are people who itemized before, so they really didn't get any benefit from the increased standard deduction, and then they lost their personal exemptions. And if you add to that, if it's a single person with no kids, they really got hit. You know, their tax table changed a little bit, their tax rate went down, but those people are just not doing very well this year.
Could folks be looking at an even bigger surprise if they don't make any changes going forward?
Potentially, yes. I would encourage anybody to get into their HR department and check their withholding, make adjustments to their withholding. And, you know, we never, Jerry, encourage people to plan for a big refund at the end of the year, because in essence, you've loaned your money to the government, right? So at the same time, we don't want people to pay. So if they just adjust the withholding to try to break even, that's what we encourage our clients to do, just try to break even at the end of the year. And then, you know, think about that, though. A lot of these people were very encouraged to get more in their weekly paychecks. When they adjust their withholding, that amount goes back away or reduces.
People's dependency or expectations when it comes to their yearly refund, you say, hey, great, I'm going to get a lump sum somewhere between maybe the beginning of February and May or whenever. Do you think people really need to adjust their thinking on this and not perhaps use it as they have in the past, but to come up with other ways to add value to their own money?
Right. I've noticed in the younger side of our client base, you know, they really look forward to that refund. They look forward to it like a bonus, and they're just not grasping that it's your own money coming back to you. But I can understand that. You know, if you're raising a family and maybe you're in a position you struggle a little bit, and then all of a sudden at the end of the year you get enough to take a small vacation or help pay off some bills or whatever. I think it's going to be difficult to change that mindset, to be honest. So it's not been a very easy year so far.
And this could take a couple of tax seasons to shake itself out.
Yes. You know, the tax laws have not had such a dramatic change in so many years that it takes a complete different mindset, not only from the worker, the individual taxpayer, but also the CPAs and the tax preparers that are out there. You have to get your head around the new plans and, you know, what some new strategies can be for your clients.
Kelly Gibson with CPA Dayton. Thanks so much for your time and the information today.
You're very welcome. Thank you.
I'm Jerry Kenney. This is Why So Weekend. Thanks so much for joining us. When small towns shrink or disappear in rural America, homestyle family restaurants feel the pinch. They have often been replaced by chains like Applebee's, Cracker Barrel, or Bob Evans. But that trend looks to be reversing. In 2016, Bob Evans, based in Ohio, sold 27 restaurants, and Bloomberg News has reported a resurgence in the popularity of mom-and-pop restaurants all over the country. Today on County Line, producer Renee Wild takes us to rural Champaign County and a hidden treasure.
Beth White's family-run restaurant sits at a four-way stop in a remote area in North Lewisburg. It's only open 3 days a week, and it doesn't advertise. But if you stumble across this former log cabin in the country, you'll find a cross-section of rural America.
We did have a dozen snowmobiles come up to the back door Saturday night. We used to take pictures of the different vehicles that pulled in here because we had lawnmowers pulling in, we had jaguars, we had tractors, and then someone stopped by on horseback.
Mom and pop diners bring to mind obscure hole-in-the-wall places with delicious food, which is a perfect description for Uncle Beth's barbecue.
My niece used to call me Uncle Beth when she first learned how to talk. And it just stuck. And then she passed away about 9 years ago. She was in a car accident. So we kind of named it in her honor. It's my son and I, we're partners. And then I have the best staff in the nation. Educated, intelligent, hardworking, show up every day. Good staff.
Ashley and Molly are behind the counter, dishing up food for today's customers.
It is amazing. I love working with all my friends, and it does get fast-paced sometimes, so it keeps us busy and going and everything. It's a really great feeling knowing that these people come back for the experience, and they really enjoy their experience here, and that's how we get a lot of regular customers.
Yeah, a lot of people travel, too. We have a lot of people that travel. Some come out of state. There's just a guy in here last week, came all the way from Delaware. Family member he has actually lives in town here. Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and he came in here every day. Thursday for our special, Friday for our prime rib, and he came back Saturday for the brisket.
It's pouring down rain outside on this Thursday afternoon, but the place is still packed.
And this is really kind of a slow day. As in the summertime, we don't have enough parking, and people are parking down the road and lined up around the building.
Many of the customers here are from the Honda plant in Marysville, and it's easy to pick them out of the crowd with their white uniforms. Honda is one of the largest employers in Ohio, with over 14,000 workers. 10% of those live in this area of Champaign and Clark counties.
Since we're a main thoroughfare for Honda, and there's really nothing else in the local area, a lot of times they'll call in for a large party size order, enough for 30 or 40 people. So I think why we are the most popular is because we make everything from scratch. A lot of restaurants, you know, make food out of boxes, bags, so forth. We make everything from scratch, from collards, sweet potato casserole, and then our mac and cheese is the most popular. And that's a recipe that my son's girlfriend's aunt gave them.
Small independent businesses like Uncle Beth's do more than just feed the local community. It nurtures the sense of community that is the backbone of rural life.
Had a customer come in and his brother-in-law was in hospice. And he said, I really want to take him a turkey dinner. So I made 4 turkey dinners for him. Gave him all the fixings like it was a Thanksgiving dinner because we had the stuffing, we had cranberries, sweet potato casserole, gravy and mashed potatoes, the whole 9 yards. And I gave them to him and I said, this is my gift to you, and I want you to celebrate. Your brother-in-law, he came back 2 weeks later, and he said, I got to tell you. He said that was the best meal he ever had, and it was his last meal. He passed away the next day. You know, it just makes your heart swell, because this is why we're here.
For County Lines on WYSO, Renee Wild, North Lewisburg, Ohio.
Today on Dayton Youth Radio, we have a story from a high school basketball player who wanted to quit after a bad game. That's when someone he calls Pops stepped in. Here's project coordinator Basim Blunt.
It's said that God couldn't be everywhere, so she created grandparents.
Yeah. Well, my name is Jabril Wilder. I'm 17. I'm currently growing up in a single-parent household. My mom, she raised five of us. I got four siblings, two brothers and two sisters. For as long as I can remember, my grandfather, Marvin Jones, and I have been very close. He stands about 6 foot tall and a gray stubble beard. He was born and raised in Dayton, Ohio. I don't have a driver's license yet, so if I need a ride somewhere, like to play basketball or whenever I need to be picked up, he's there for me. Now that I think about it, I can't name not one time I called him and he didn't answer the phone.
What is your name?
Marvin Jones.
All right, growing up, was your father in your life?
Not at first, but eventually, he came around. So that was a plus. I enjoyed that.
He has been a father figure to me ever since I have been born.
What are some things that you remember about our relationship, like things that we used to do, like when I was younger?
We used to hang out, go either play some basketball or go somewhere and eat. It was just a chance to nurture some things in my grandson. You had a very meek spirit. You were always cordial. I mean, you respected your elders. I noticed that you're more serious about what it is you need to do physically. You're more serious about what it is you need to do more spiritually.
I think growing up around my grandfather made me a better person because he influenced me to be responsible in life and look at life in a funny, different kind of way. Like the time when I had a bad game. I missed a lot of shots that I normally make. I had some turnovers and we lost. After playing like that, I thought about just not playing basketball anymore. After the game, my grandfather talked to me about staying encouraged and telling me ways of how I could improve on the next game. He began telling me stories about his high school basketball games and how he didn't always play good either. After talking to him more and more, I began to feel better about my situation. If it wasn't for him, I probably wouldn't be playing basketball to this day.
There's always somebody out there that's better than you. That's just how God created us. But the one thing is you never let nobody outwork you. Always give your best in whatever situation you're in. Always give your best. You always bring your A game when it comes time to work.
I never really expressed to my grandfather like how I feel about the things he does for me, and I never like really thanked him and things like that.
If I was ever to become a father, when and if I become a father, what advice would you give me to my children?
Well, the advice I would give to you is just always be there from day one. Be there when they start walking, when they start talking, because that you can never get that back. So that's very special, not only to the child, but it's special to you. So be there from day one until the very end.
My story will maybe inspire teenagers to get a better relationship with their grandparents or get to know their grandparents more or spend more time with them and appreciate them while you still have them here on this earth, because they are very wise people and they can teach you a lot about life. For Dayton Youth Radio, this is Jabri Waller.
That's a story entitled Pops. Written and produced by Jabri Wilder, a senior at the Dayton Early College Academy. Special thanks to his grandpa, Marvin Jones, and also Ann Rasmussen at DECA. For Dayton Youth Radio, this is Basine Blunt.
Support for Dayton Youth Radio comes from the Virginia W. Kettering Foundation and the Ohio Arts Council. Find more Dayton Youth Radio stories on our website at WYSO.org. I'm Jerry Kenney. This is WYSO Weekend. When a woman comes up to you, looking good somehow, what she gonna do?
This is Bill Felker with Poor Will's Almanac for the third week of early spring and the first week of the cabbage white butterfly moon, the third week of the sun in Pisces, and the week of daylight saving time beginning. So on the 6th of March, the cabbage white butterfly moon is new, and white cabbage butterflies are the sure sign of the full sweep of early spring. Once you notice those butterflies, then you know that the more elusive question mark butterflies and tortoiseshell butterflies and the tiny blues, they're flying too. When you see cabbage butterflies, well, then you know that goldfinches are turning gold, and if you see a cabbage butterfly, then you know that, well, catfish have begun spring feeding and breeding. If you see one of those white cabbage butterflies, then, well, green bottle flies have hatched, and unfortunately, termites are swarming. If you see a white cabbage butterfly on your way to work, you can know that middle spring's hepatica and twin leaf are pushing out in the sanctuary of the woodlands. Toad, trillium, and Dutchman's britches are ready to open there. The entire spectrum of wildflowers surging to encounter April. Cherry trees usually blossom in the nation's capital under the cabbage white butterfly moon. Azaleas and camellias bloom in the deep south. In the Ohio Valley, the first bluebells press through the mulch no matter what the weather. And snowdrops, aconites, and snow crocuses reach the peak of their seasons in town. This is Bill Felker with Poor Will's Almanac. I'll be back again next week with notes for the fourth week of early spring and the second week of the cabbage white butterfly moon. In the meantime, well, look for cabbage white butterflies when the days turn warm and the evenings are long with daylight saving time.
Bill Felker contributes to newspapers nationwide, including the Yellow Springs News. Bill resides in Yellow Springs. Poor Will's Almanac is also available as a podcast at WYSO.org.
That's it for this edition of WISO Weekend on 91.3 WYSO, giving voice to our community, our nation, and our world since 1958, thanks to generous listeners like you. I'm Jerry Kenney. Thanks for joining us. We've got more next Sunday, 10 a.m. Coming up next on WISO, it's Vic McCunis with The Book Nook.